I know it's probably an ambush for you, but between myself and the committee chair and the rest of the committee, it's not an ambush.
Chairperson, it's an ambush for me. I'm expecting the Chief Land Claims Commissioner to arrive, and then if he is in a position to assist with further information, I will be able to respond. So for now,
I'm the one who's putting you in the record. The real issue is that the committee must consider the matter that as a committee. It's not a matter that we cannot discuss, even if you were not here. It's a matter that we could have discussed so that we come to you with a detached position of the committee. I just wanted to manage it in such a way that by the time it gets to you, I'm being transparent now. By the time it gets to you, you are able to give us all the facts rather than to deal with it as in a form of a number. But anyway, we put it in the agenda. We put item number 3 in the agenda, or number 2, because number 3 will be the minute. Any other matter? I've been told by the Secretary that the report, progress report on the Diani project, pilot project, has been sent to members. Do all members have a copy? Because we have no time, it may be taken only as read, and then if there are any matters arising from that report, public members will raise this copy. And then we can add to those matters in the beginning of the next. Again, so we've got 4 items on this. Item number 1 is the presentation by the EG. Item number 2 will be the question of the Commission in the auditorium on land claim. Number 3 will be the minutes, and number 4 will be the progress report of the Diani DHA final session. I put the agenda we are adopting it as it stands. Agreed? Thank you very much. Let's move forward. DG, you are ready. Please, members, put your pen and paper together because DG will not be disrupted until it finishes, and then we will ask you some questions on the table.
Chairperson, it seems this technology is failing us, but I will speak up.
Yeah, there are some of them that are waiting to check whether you can find one that way.
This side is not working. I don't know what's happening. That side is working. Thank you very much, Chairperson. We really appreciate the invitation by the committee to come and have a discussion with you on the institutional arrangements for the CRDP, Comprehensive Rural Development Program. Let me introduce our team here. We've got our parliamentary officers that are here with us, together with the Office of the Ministry. Alton, you know him, he's here, and we'll see Maslangu, our CFO, and Leona, who is heading our Rural Infrastructure Development Program. And myself. So that's the team. The purpose of this is to report to the portfolio committee on the institutional and organizational arrangements for the implementation of the CRPP as has been requested. We have developed this CRPP management system, and we have discussed this with various stakeholders. It was a consultative process, and we are still improving on it because this is new to us, so we are still working on it. We understand our mandate, that the president has given us the mandate, the minister, the mandate to implement rural development, hence the establishment of this Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. From that office in the ministry, we are expecting the development of the program like we are currently doing, the development of policy and related legislation, and the issue of coordination at a broad political level. This means that the minister can actually has got the responsibility to go and liaise with the various provinces. And what he is doing is he is speaking to the premiers in the provinces so that the premiers can understand the policy, the issues that relate to the implementation of this program, so that he is part of the political negotiations and consultations with the various provinces. At the second level, we say the premier is responsible for championing this in the provinces, and by implementation, we have been visiting the various provinces. We meet with the premier, and in a number of cases, the premier will bring in relevant MECs. In most of the provinces, as I reported, this function of rural development is linked to the Department of Agriculture in the province. It's only the Free State where it's put with public works. But practically, the premier would call the MECs, and the MECs would discuss this and agree on how they should approach the implementation of the CRPP. To us, this is very critical to get that buy-in, to get the support from the various provincial departments. And then the premier will delegate this to the MEC responsible for this function in the province. So in the province, then the MEC will actually interact with the relevant MECs, so that they can have a discussion of this CRPP, the implementation. I like the KwaZulu-Natal approach, where they even have a focused group of ministers, MECs, who deal with this, and in their structure of reporting to the to their cabinet, they have got this cluster of ministers that work in this, and we would like the other provinces to follow a similar arrangement. But the point I'm making here is that in the province, it is the premier and the relevant MEC that works together to define their approach as the province to the implementation of this CRPP. And then the next level is the Council of Stakeholders. I will come to the Council of Stakeholders to explain how that functions, but the political mandate flows from the MEC and the premier to the local municipality. The district municipality and the local municipality, the mayor there also have a discussion with the MEC to define what is it that they are going to do. So that is the structure that we follow in terms of the political arrangements to support this program. In terms of the administrative arrangements, we've got technical committees attached to these levels. The head of this administrative technical team is the DG of Rural Development and Land Reform, the DG of the province, and the DG of War on Poverty from the presidency. So those DGs work together when they are in the technical team meetings. They work together to give direction to the HODs. Yesterday I was in Mabato in Northwest, to speak to the Premier and to speak to all the HODs. They have meetings on Tuesday. To speak to all of the HODs there. So we speak to these HODs, and each HOD will commit to what is it that they are going to do in supporting this program. So this is what we do in all of the provinces, in these technical committees. I'll be speaking to these technical committees, but I just want to paint the broad picture of our approach. And then the HODs will work together in a CRDP technical committee, which reports to the Council of Stakeholders, and it is the municipal manager that will work together in that technical committee at the local level to define some of the programs and approaches at the local level. And then that technical committee reports to this Council of Stakeholders. I'll be coming back to those. But I'm just saying that the broad framework of how we interact with one another is following that kind of model. And then below that, those technical committees is the households. There are groups of 20 household members and the cooperatives that are established, or other enterprise groups that are working at the local level. And our goal, which informs the way we work at each of those levels, is that we would like to achieve social cohesion with all of these, and we would like to have the end product, which would be food security, health, education, shared economic growth, social cohesion, development of the people, and fulfillment of the visions and goals of the people. I have explained this this council of stakeholders. I mean, this the political champions, and I want to refer you to this addendum A. In addendum A, there is this addendum, addendum A, which we have just sent you. In that addendum, you will appreciate that we are working through the clusters of government. Government is organizing itself in clusters. I am not showing it on the screen. Yeah, in the screen we have shown page 3 of the addendum. The page 3 of the addendum. Now, we are using these technical committees which are linked to the way government has organized itself, which is these clusters, the Economic Technical Committee, which deals with infrastructure, roads and transport, agriculture infrastructure, the issues that relate to governance and administration cluster, the CRDP Infrastructure Development Technical Committee, which is linked to the government cluster on infrastructure, and the CRPP Justice and Crime Prevention and Security Committee, and then the CRPP Social Technical Committee. We have looked at what are the relevant departments. If you recall the Biani experience, where there are 14 departments in that province, as they get into these committees, we are saying that they must link their clusters to these committees that are there on the ground at the local level. We did report to you that in Giani there are 12 subcommittees. Those 12 subcommittees are committees that emerged from the interaction at the local level. We did that household profile and that community profile in Giani, and out of that, we emerged to the 25 areas of need, which the community, through a participatory program, prioritized their needs in that community. And they said water is number one, I think agriculture is number seven, up to 25. Now, they've grouped themselves into committees, 12 committees. There is a water committee, there is an education committee, there is a health committee, There is a social and justice security committee which deals with crime and other things in the rural area. So those committees which are trialed in the community would be grouped or linked to the clusters that the government is using. So in the government clusters, these reports will be received, and some of the representatives of government will report at the Council of Stakeholders so that they can interact with the community at that level of the Council of Stakeholders. We have tried in Limpopo to look at which departments are relevant to each committee, which departments are relevant to each committee, so that as they report to these committees at the Council of Stakeholders, each cluster would be able to respond and say, what is it, what progress has been made in that particular regard. So this is what we are saying we should be focusing on. Well, at the higher level, on page 4, we have indicated of page 4 of the addendum, the same addendum, we have looked at what would be the arrangement at the higher level. At the higher level, then it would be linking this to the clusters that are there. The clusters are national clusters, and then provincial clusters, and then there is the forum of the DGs who are dealing with these issues, who would like a report that is going to be linked to that. And it will, if you go national, it will fall into the plan of action that the overall government is reporting to. And if you go to the provinces also have a framework for reporting on the work of the cluster. They would report on what progress they have made at that level. And if you go to the local area, it would be the mayors reporting on what progress they are getting on these relevant projects at the local level. And then at the technical level, it would be the technical committees that report to the CRDP Council of Stakeholders. So that is the proposed arrangement. This was discussed with the departments, as I said, with the 14 departments in the Limpopo province, and we, when we go to other provinces, we are sharing the same lessons that we are learning from Limpopo. And then, if I go back to the question of the Council of Stakeholders in the main presentation, I'm talking to page 5 of that presentation, the Council of Stakeholders. The Council of Stakeholders is consisting of members of the CBOs. They've got forums and structures at that level. It's including civic organizations or ward committees that are working on the various matters in that locality. It also includes government sector departments. As I indicated, government may be represented by clusters in that Council of Stakeholders. And then we are also inviting to that Council of Stakeholders private sector institutions. In Giani, the ones that have shown interest is Old Mutual. Old Mutual has shown interest in working with the people. They want to use the experience of their projects they have implemented in the Sandani area, in the Eastern Cape, and in KZN, where Old Mutual is interacting with the communities to support them through their CSI program. They are supporting some of the communities in that area, as I indicated in one meeting. They were even considering the issues of insurance of the rural assets, such as the houses and the livestock, which they have not done generally, but because they started that, they started this issue of abandoning their livestock. So in Sandani and in KwaZulu-Natal, where they have started this branding of the livestock so that it can be insured. So all Port Mutual have expressed interest in this area, so we include such private sector organizations if they are interested to be part of this, especially if they've got something to contribute in that locality, in that area. And then NGOs, we're saying NGOs are a very critical partner, particularly when it comes to capacity building and issues of organizing people into structures that are going to assist in this. And then the issue of traditional leaders, they are part of that. Traditional leaders are the important part of this council of stakeholders. In Muyesha, we have two chiefs that are participating in this in this structure. So they are important in that regard. So this is the composition of the council of stakeholders. Now, the terms of reference for the council of stakeholders include the enforcing. Ensuring compliance with conditionality. We did say that one of the things, the reasons why Africa is littered with failed projects is the lack of discipline in the organization of people, where people will not commit to things that they have agreed to. One can add that in South Africa we noticed this over reliance on entitlements than on responsibilities. So if government has done something, then people do not want to commit to doing something themselves. There is a culture of demanding from government. And we are saying that if people learn to take responsibility, we have learned this from this group of women in Muyesha. In Muyesha, what they have done is they have got a group of women which is producing vegetables. And they are asking that group to indicate what is their strength, why have they continued for 4 years in good production. And the response from that group of women is that it is the rules have assisted. They have got strong rules to say thou shalt not do this. If you do this, you are out of this group. So it's rules that are actually enforced by the group members themselves. And you cannot deceive any member because they are there with you every day. They know what are your problems. If you are not a good hard worker, then they are able to say, no, you have not done your homework here. So they are able to enforce the rules. So we are saying it is those rules that can strengthen our structures at the level of the community. So we're saying that the Council of Stakeholders then would ensure that these groups of 20, these cooperatives, these business initiatives are going to comply with and observe their rules and goals and initiatives so that they don't walk away from projects, but they take responsibility to make sure that those projects are working. And then we have seen that as these various government departments and private sector interact with the community, it must not be throwing money to problems, but rather it must be interacting with people such that people take responsibility. And we say it is when there are those things, it is better in a community that those who are criminals or who do wrong things in the community are more afraid of the community members than the police who are coming from far away. So if there is that enforcement of justice and fairness within the community, you are a stronger community than a community that depends on a police station. So we are saying unless there are these self-imposed rules, regulations, and initiatives, we are going to be wasting our time. So this Council of Stakeholders, we say, is a structure that will ensure compliance, and it will also ensure that there is a code of conduct in that area, and that they have a code of discipline and even disciplinary panels where there are cases like that. And we are learning this from that experience of women in Muyesha, because that's what they told us.
And then the other area is that they must be responsible for planning and implementation of projects with the CRPP technical committee. If there are things going wrong with the project, it is these council of stakeholders that will tell you that no, this thing is not done right, there's something wrong with this. It was not like this in the plan as what stated and endorsed. So we must make sure that things are happening right. For example, if there is in this job creation model, some people that are employed in these projects and they work short hours or are not reliable in the project, the Council of Stakeholders has to mandate the panel, or the disciplinary panel, to take action against those people who violate some of the things that we are doing. So we see this as the terms of reference for the Council of Stakeholders. And then the CRPP technical committees, which are in the structure, we believe that these will be primarily led by professionals in those fields. If we're talking about water, it would be people who know much more about water. For example, in Kiani, it was the people from Water Affairs who did the analysis of the water levels. They found that the two dams that are there in Moesha are at 5% and 6% respectively. So it's really the scarcity of water. They depend on rain. Now, they also did the hydrological test to look at the quality of the water, which is underground water in that area. And they told us that it was high in the nitrate content and therefore not good for human consumption. So it would be the technical team that would assist us in that area. So is the case with agriculture, it is the Department of Agriculture, those extension officers who have been working with the women in that agricultural project to advise them on what are the best crops for what season and which ones are marketable. So I think the technical teams would be led by experts in those areas. But those experts must work with the community so that the community is always part of this expert advice that is given. This is where we have said indigenous knowledge is critical, because those people have been in that area, they know which trees grow better. Like in one area there was an ambition to produce citrus in that area, but clearly there's no water. And one expert advice was, why don't you consider mangoes? Because mangoes do not require as high volume of water as the citrus. So look at what is doable in the area. So these technical teams would be led by experts, but we emphasize that they must link experts' modern knowledge with indigenous knowledge systems so that the two can work better for the people in terms of ownership, continuity and sustainability. Then the expert would also be assisting in terms of project management, because in that project management it is important to look at whether the projects are on time and are doing what they are supposed to do. So we need project management advice, and that can be a link to what the people can do, their capacity. Then if we go to the household cooperatives, we have said that these groups are very critical to us. We have spoken to IDP. IDP have given us a one-day course on the establishment of cooperatives, and they have explained to us the process that is followed in establishing cooperatives, the types of cooperatives, and the support that they, as DTI, Department of Trade and Industry, provides to those cooperatives. And as such, in that area in Kian, they also have a number of co-ops that are there which have been established, which they want to support. So our approach is that the communities in their area must be supported in terms of their interests, sector interests, such as we are a group that is interested in producing vegetables. We are a group that is interested in livestock farming. We are a group that is interested in sheep production, and we would like any value chain activities like wool production related to our interest. Livestock farmers are many in that area, found more than 2,000 cattle in that area, and they are invested in a number of other support systems for livestock farmers. We are saying they can be grouped in those, and then technical advice will be given to those in those areas, and they will be trained in the relevant sectors that the people have grouped themselves into. And then the issue of the creating jobs for each household around that particular area of intervention. We do have a group that is already employed around fencing, so we are finalizing contracts in that regard. We do have a group that is going there next week, which is going to consider organic farming, the permaculture approach, to say in the light of the scarcity of water in that area, what are the technologies that you can use, which can be water saving mechanisms which are sustainable. So a group is going there, and there's some people who are interested in organic farming and in green production, which means that they may not be using chemicals and all of that. And there is a market for it. They are even talking about export for these particular types of products, which is what you would get in Woolworths and so on. So we are saying that technical training will be provided to the specific group according to the needs of those groups. And then the other area is from the household profiles, from the community profiles, and from the needs that have been identified in that community. I said there are 25 in Kian. We would want to know what are the areas of intervention, and we are challenging this department to come in and do their part in those areas. The other area which is linked to this is the area of capacity building for the communities, the skills training, and we have talked to the IDT about the use of the heaters, the various heaters, according to those sectors. Like if you talk agriculture, we would like to get the agriculture sector so that we can look at what training, which is SACWA accredited, which can be provided to those people during this 2-year period of employment. Talking about employment, the employment creation model, we have discussed with Public Works, and Public Works have shown interest in actually looking at this, and they have said they would like to be part of this. If we are going to use their extended public works program, they are implementing phase 2 of that at the moment, and they are saying they want this continuity, they want sustainability. They want to ensure that there is meaningful jobs that come, not just these temporal jobs. And they are very keen on this employment creation model, which talks about a 2-year continuous training and engagement. They are very keen on that type of approach. And they said we must work together with them. But to take this matter further, we have looked at some of the possibilities in this area where there are the, I'm referring to Annex B in this the job creation model. I'm referring to that. We have looked, and page 2 of that shows some of the analysis that we have done in Munyesha, which talks to self-employment creation possibilities. We have identified 8 households that have already started with these self-employment creation projects. And then salaried employment, we have identified 18 households that have already been employed in those areas. And then this one was linked to, you will recall that I told you about the National Integrated Socioeconomic Information System, the NISIS, from the Department of Social Development. That NESIS system shows us when we have done the household profiling, they capture how many households are employed, how many households are in need of what, and one of the things that they capture is whether there is any state grants or support systems to those communities. And some in a number of cases in that profiling, we have established that there's a number of people that have no IDs in Moesha. So this NESIS system has got an automatic referral system which says if there are people who are of age who do not have IDs which they should have, they are referred, the system refers that inquiry directly to Home Affairs, so that Home Affairs can pay attention to this list of households that have no IDs, which will be having IDs. But what the system also captures is people that should be qualifying for grants, but who do not. And it also captures who are in the system, in the grant system of the government. And we found that in that particular ward, there were about 60 people that were already in the system, at least in those questionnaires that we had captured already. The report says that there were 60 people who were either in old age pension or child support grant or foster child grant or disability grant. And then there were about 68 households that had no form of employment, no body employed in the household in any area, not working anywhere. But this is not a complete issue, it's just a flavor of the questionnaires that we have captured at that point in time. This is the report that was given to us by the system on the questionnaires. But we do have this system that tries to do this. And we have agreed with IDT, Independent Development Trust, that working with, since they are reporting to Public Works, the department, we are going to engage them as an agent for this job creation model so that they can monitor, enter into contracts with those people that are going to be working on the various projects so that they can administer that part of this program. So we do have a working relationship with IDT for the implementation of this. I'm not going to repeat the job creation model, but I thought I must include it for your information. You have listened to our presentation of this job creation model, where we say we would like to employ people in those areas of the pilot site and provide training for a two-year period and ensure that there is a transfer of skills and there's continuity and sustainability for those communities. Coming to the organizational and personnel implications, with this department we have looked at what is our mandate, what are those things that we have to do, and what are the programs that we are involved in. So we have tried to reorganize the department. We are no longer the department that was there, which was the Department of Land Affairs. We have, for example, interacted with the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, COPTA, who was running the ISRDP and Urban Renewal Program. We have agreed with them that component of ISRDP we are going to take over to our department, which we have done. We have taken all of their staff members. They are already in the department now. We have taken their structure, the work that they were doing. We found that they were doing more of the coordination and facilitation function with the various departments and provinces. We have tried to improve on that it is not just coordination and facilitation, but also the function that we have, which is that of the facilitator and the catalyst. So we're improving on what they have been doing. But we have taken a lot of lessons from what ISRDP has done. We're taking notes, plural notes that they have adopted. We have followed those notes. We are working on those projects. We are continuing with the work that they were doing.
but we are expanding the lessons from what they have done to this new pilot site that we are doing with our program. Just to indicate that we are also working with the other departments like water affairs, agriculture, housing, according to the needs, like I did express earlier. This is the macro structure on slide 11. The macro structure, which just gives you a very broad picture of how we have reorganized the department so that the department can speak to the mission and the vision as we have reconfigured the department. The white boxes are what has been existing. Your land claims commission, your land reform program, your chief registrar of deeds, your chief surveyor general, and the support services will be your corporate services functions, and then your chief financial officer. Those were the existing structures in the department. We've just reconfigured them to align them with the new vision and mission. The blue boxes are the new branches of the department. The geospatial services, technology development, and disaster management. This is focusing on things such as surveys and mapping and spatial planning. And we found that this function is very, very critical. In fact, if you go to our website, the reports that you read from the website on Vianney, on Rimfasma, and on I think recently Eastern Cape, we have completed that report, and the Free States report was just completed. We are now working on KwaZulu-Natal as well as Mkhondo. We are finalizing Mkhondo report. This week they are working in Northwest. That report is produced by officials, the report that you may have seen in our website. It's produced by officials who have not appointed any consultants, and we have taken a decision not to do so, to use officials from other government departments to ensure that they contribute to this. So that component of GEO, special services, technical technology development and disaster management is doing that function. Those reports you read will be prepared largely by those. And then we've also established a social, technical, rural livelihood institutional facilitation component, which does exactly what is contained in that long title. Social facilitation, they go and interact with the people, emphasize on community participation, household profiling and community profiling, establishment of these sector committees like the 12 by the 13 PM, and they will do the facilitation of the stakeholder, council of stakeholder functioning. So that is what that component does. They also invite the interested parties, the department, to get their commitment, to actually align with what they are doing, to what is happening on the ground, to get the new orientation. As I indicated, some of the officials are not used to this community participation approach. They are used to government telling what to do. But this component is trying to get everyone to talk and to agree on the way to do things. So that's the function of that component. And then the third component is the rural infrastructure development. This one is focusing on what we have defined as the key competence of this, which talks to the social infrastructure, the economic infrastructure, and the public amenities. It talks to interacting with those departments. For example, Leona is heading that department to look at what is the road infrastructure in those areas. She is discussing with, for example, the Department of Transport, who have shared with us their rural transport strategy. And they are saying that they would like to interact with us because they have the plan over the past 3-4 years. They have developed that rural
and transport strategy. Now, they are saying, what is it that we can do in facilitating the implementation of that rural transport strategy? So that's a function to get those people according to their areas of specialization. The case is through with electrification, rural electrification, where the discussion with ESCOM leadership together with the World Bank to discuss on what needs to be done on rural electrification, because it's an issue. For example, when we were in Tiang, we found that when we were talking about those boreholes, there were three of them that we specifically visited, which were not functioning, not because they shouldn't, but because there was no electric pump to pump the water up the hill to the reservoir for gravity to the people. So you need a rural electrification, not only for life, but also for thermal projects, such as the issue of reviving boreholes. So she's discussing with people like ESCOM so that they can say what to contribute. We found quite a number of rural communities that still have not accessed the rural electrification program. So she's talking to those. We are also talking about these infrastructure projects like that to some extent this multi-purpose training center. So they are talking about those. So that is their function. They will talk with the different functions as they interact with those people. I just wanted to refer to Addendum C in concluding to say that in that Addendum C we have tried to look at the structure of some of the work that we are doing. If you look at the three legs of this part of CRPP, one leg is agrarian transformation. And as we are interacting with Diane Limpopo, we have looked at that leg of this part called agrarian transformation. What does it mean in terms of this institutional arrangement that we are talking about here? With all the agricultural projects, the soil suitability analysis, the arable land and the grazing land, the eradication of animal diseases, social provision of agricultural support, establishment of household gardens, revitalization of the garden, and the revitalization of the household garden, family garden. What is it that can be done around that in order to achieve the greater vision of agrarian transformation, which should lead to increased agricultural production, which should increase to increased incomes sources for the households, which should lead to sustainable development for those communities and the improvement of the quality of life. In trying to achieve those ideals of agrarian transformation, what should we do? In that table, you will see that we have tried to interact with various departments, various institutions, like your Department of Land Affairs and Agriculture in the province, like your Department of Water Affairs. The various departments must own up on some of these things. What shall we do? So we try to do this and to give a breakdown of what will it cost and what will it what is the required budget to do this. Some of the items may not be budgeted, but this is our planning template. Some of the departments have not come with their commitments to each of those items that are listed there. But it was a consultative process with those departments and with the communities that led to the itemization of those things that you see in that list. The second leg is on page the rural development page 3 of this. That rural development, we have looked at the various items of that one, like this water that have talked to, like delivery of basic services, roads, upgrading of roads. We have identified these 300 and 50 households out of the 900 or almost 1,000 households that are there. We found that there were 300 and 50 households that were barely having a shelter. They are attached to the roofs, were almost falling apart, putting plastics on their roofs so that there's no water during rainy season. So we did with this household analysis. We found that there were these 350 households that were having challenges about housing. And we have spoken to the Department of Housing. We have spoken to the provincial Department of Local Government, and which has got the function of providing housing. We have spoken to the National Department of Housing, and they are saying that they would like to assist in this regard. And around that one, we're also talking about issues of school sanitation. They have built some of the sanitation for the schools to improve the toilets and all of that. They have looked at issues of health, like the clinic that has been revitalized. They now have a resident nurse, when in fact they had a mobile clinic before we came there. And then we have talked to the establishment of the sporting facilities for the recreation. The youth were very interested in this particular project. And we have talked to the establishment of the Tusom Center and the support to the early childhood development programs. They have centers that deal with ECD in that village. And then the issues of general business development in that area. And we have identified each program, I mean each department, for each of those type of activities. So in this institutional arrangement, this is the type of work we are trying to get in terms of the commitment. And then the last leg is the land reform program, where we have looked at issues of the optimal use of the land that is available, the fast-tracking of land reform, and the issue of the provision of security of China to those people, and the use of grants to those communities that we have been. Thank you very much. That's the end of the presentation. I thank you.
Can you summarize your and prioritize your question on Kiku? Because if you don't prioritize the question, don't explain it, just ask it. Some color of wood was down, talk at the allow of it. Really, you know, sir.
Manbule Lestaf, Oamumbuzo, Mia. I think I'd like to just ask on the DG, you know, I continuously see us referring to traditional leaders and traditional institutions being partners in this initiative by the department. But as I listened in the presentation, I think first it was located to be working somewhat in the Premier's office or working jointly at that level with the Premier. Then somewhere in the presentation is in the Council of Stakeholders next to the NGOs. subsequently or probably just forgotten and added on, traditional institutions should be established. And on the establishment of traditional institutions, I go to your addendum C and look at all the budgets that have been put in place and as to what is being done in the area. But I don't see anything being done to capacitate the traditional leaders in that area, as well as to build infrastructure for them in that area, such as traditional courts. Those people, especially in rural areas, are deprived of traditional courts. You have to travel long distances to gain access to courts. And I believe in the trip to Guyana, some of our members from the committee who went there would have witnessed that the traditional leaders were just being cheerleaders at the end of the day, slotted in to do a vote of thanks, and not really clued up as to what these programs are and what the department is enrolling in the area. So I'd like to understand what your role has been into capacitating traditional leaders in the US area.
Thank you, Professor. Let me start by thanking Robin Stolfo for the presentation. I think it was very much informative. But I first have two questions that were indicated that we are to remember our questions. The first one is on the Tanzanian North Visa CRCP, because if we are saying the national, at the national level, the minister will be the one who is the champion, then at the political level, we are saying the senior will be the one. What was the rationale behind? Because my understanding is that the MEC was who is the political head of the rural development, agriculture and rural development, should be the one who's championing this process. Then the other one, you mentioned the issue of the various committees which were formed. You know, I think this, there were committees that were in place, which were responsible for development, the work committees. So are we not going to cause confusion to establish more committees instead of using the existing work committees to push this program forward in the future? And how are these committees going to relate to the work committees?
Minus two. I'm very sure. First, also just want to say thank you. Very impressive. My one question is there going to be a vehicle created by the department that is going to drive this plan? Very simple. And you could change the noise that they're talking. And what you can just know, how will this be written in such a way that the high school level of the second question, maybe it's not there, I don't know. Being consistent with senior, I visited a village where the chief producer has no development in this area. I don't know whether it is because we voted for a long time. Now, very specifically, I mean, it was not Cope, because Cope was not here at the time.
Yeah.
And I just, since we are in this field, really, as a parliamentary field, monitoring the field, what assurances can we be given that will ensure that this powerful project on the ground is not used in a practical way?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
you have mentioned that the state times will go to the rural areas to assist the people with the human field. I just think instances are going to make to the state of protest. I never see state times in the rural area. Secondly, you mentioned about this borehole. Years ago, it's my constituency, the government has made boreholes in most of the schools in the area, but to leave them without training the borehole that stuck, how they are going to repair it. But most of them are not working.
There should also be some representation of unions. But putting this council of stakeholders together, are you going to leave it to this organization to determine who must attend the forum? Because if you don't have consistency and these organizations can get these people all the time, so I think there needs to be some guidelines from the department to the stakeholders as to who you would like to attend. I also think there should be guidelines as to how many times they meet and when. So that there's not just one meeting now and then once or twice a year. That in the beginning it should actually be monthly meetings. And if just an idea that maybe we as a portfolio committee can sometimes attend the stakeholders forum meetings, if we can attend and learn, you know, how the various stakeholders feel about the rural development and their role in that.
Thank you very much.
To transfer to the rural community.
on the job creation. I want to know, I mean, we're thinking about the area. It's dry. It's very dry. And the transfer skills. And it's indicated here that they're going to be employing 1,000 for a period of 2 years. Then they've gained themselves. What next after this? What is going to happen after this? Because they have to continue being able to put themselves. I know the pilot project, but what is going to happen after 2 years for those that have skills? Are we as government going to ensure that we pay them in departments, provincial and national? Thank you.
Going on. I visited those farms, the mangrove trees 2 meters under grass,
nothing is going on. So why are we separating it? So that's my perception. That we're separating the part of the rural development and value thing, and I don't see the link.
Thank you, thank you, sir. What I want to find out from the DJ is, you know, whenever you do have every available asset that will affect the community from changes that happen. And if you do, how will they pass this knowledge to the community? And the last one is, in this arena, we have two target dates there. Some of them already passed, that is August, actually, already passed. And then September now. Have you met these targets?
Yes.
You have said there is a requirement for stakeholders to enforce compliance of the conditionality. Mm-hmm. They want the conditionality. What are those conditions? My question is the same as what is the question, but it is in line with what you discussed last time. In your strategy, you said equity and sustainability. For all the work that you do. My question on sustainability is, Bishop Gandala has asked the question, will you have a vehicle that drives all this? I'm just imagining in Egypt that in the whole country you have a leadership that are doing exactly this. And you have a budget that is allocated in each village or in each project. The sustainability of those projects in line with, because as I see, it looks like your budget that we're talking about here is an initiation budget for the infrastructure of the project that must get off the ground. For sustainability, you have another budget, or will get your budget from another budget. So I'm actually asking three questions in one. You have a vehicle that coordinates all this work throughout the country. You have got initiation budget for the starting of the project and the sustainability of that, where will it come from? I mean, I'm also raising this question in line with what you said earlier to us. You said it will take you 2 years for your rural development agency to get off the ground. And now you must coordinate all this work via the premier and the department and other departments. Is your capacity in the department able to carry this work and monitor it and drive it? So which is the official gender of the question?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I really appreciate some of the statements were more comments than questions, but I'll try, and my colleagues will come in. On the question of the traditional leaders, they are involved at these levels, and our emphasis was where these these traditional leaders are, which is where the things are happening, the projects are happening. So even in Muyesha, we've got the two chiefs that are involved in the greater area, administrative area, and in the local area. The issue of the budget, we have not identified budget specifically for the traditional
leaders. But in the process, we are informed by the prioritization. The issue of the traditional courts did not arise as an issue in the 25 items that they had indicated. And interestingly, the Chief Muyashe himself, personally, was the facilitator at the discussion of this prioritization list of 25 items. He was the one, in fact, if we had time, we will show you the pictures of our facilitation process, where he was particularly involved in it. So I'm saying if the traditional courts come out as an item number 25 or 26 in their list of prioritization, it will definitely be covered. And then, well, I will not talk to the issue of the their involvement in the program. In that program where the chiefs were put as in the board of them, we had only about five or six speakers in that program. And when the president is there, we can't have many people occupying different slots in the program. So we tried to be as inclusive as possible in that, to include the mayor, the premier, the president, the minister, and the chiefs. So all of the categories were involved in that agenda. It is no, to put the president as number two from the last in the program does not mean that he is less important. It's just in the flow of things in the agenda. The president was number six and not number one or number two. So was the chief. So the issue of the championing in the provinces, it is not a mistake that we've said the premier is a champion. The NEC has got a dedicated championship, if you like. It is the reason why we want the premier to be the champion is to ensure the cooperation of all government departments. Because once the thing is like that of the MECs, the other MECs do not respond when we want their response to some of the issues. So strategically, we have agreed that the office of the premier is the one that should call everyone to action. And then the MEC is the one who does the actual physical liaison with the various programs. And then the issue of the various committees. And the relationship with the existing committees, like the ward committees. The ward committees, this we have explained in Muyasha when we were doing the inauguration of the Council of Stakeholders. It was the councillor who is in the area who was actually chairing that meeting, and she is participating in this Council of Stakeholders. And we explained that this Council of Stakeholders is not competing with the ward committee, is not competing with the traditional, because the traditional council has got their own meeting, and this is not competing with that. This is very CRDP-oriented, action-oriented, program-oriented. So it discusses that. These things arise because we refer to quite a number of committees that are there in the community. There is the school governing board. There is the health or clinic committees that are there. We're saying they are participating in this. If there are issues of health, they will arise in this Council of Stakeholders. But it does not undermine the specific structures like the FGB, like the health committees. They still continue their specialized functions relating to education and health. But this one is talking about the broad development agenda for that area. Well, the vehicle for driving this program, it is true that this is new and we do not have a one big, if you are talking about a big as one department or as one entity like the RDA as we envisage it. We don't have that at the moment. At the moment, we rely on the legislation of Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, which says we have got the capacity to call other government departments to action around a particular program. So we are relying on that. as well as the municipal system legislation, which calls stakeholders to action at the local level. So we're using that framework, legal framework, for getting people to come to the party. We see ourselves as the initiator, catalyst, as the lead department in calling other stakeholders to the party. But as we said, we think that as this work expands, we will need these people. At the moment, we don't have that people, but we rely on the existing framework that government has defined, as outlined in the intergovernmental relations framework, and we are that lead department. Capacity, we don't have enough capacity at the moment, but we rely on the cooperation of other governments. This is why we use the instrument of collaboration and coordination. And that's why we're using the pressure from the political principles like the Premier and the MEPs to actually get people to action in the various departments. So we believe the government is should be oiled enough to be able to take these challenges as we all cooperate. That this could be used that there is no partisan approach to this. We have in all of the programs, we have said we are the government of South Africa. We don't come with a particular orientation, and we are not going to use this for any particular political party interest. And we have said this to everyone. So we are government, and we implement this as government, and we will refuse or reject any orientation to use this in a partisan way. So that should not address, that should not arise. The use of sitters, yeah, we also agree that some sitters may not be there in the rural area. But we have had discussions with the minister placing the mandate in education to say that we need the whole reorientation of the sitters. So perhaps when we talk about that reorientation, this is what we will be doing. We have talked, for example, with the sitter of agriculture. We are not happy with the minimalist approach in their training, where they will train only people to be very good employees or laborers. We want the training to be expanded to the various levels of responsibility, even in the value chain process. So we are talking about sitters and the role that they can play, and we like the fact that they are accredited by SAPA in their training, so we see a role for them to play in this regard. However, we are emphasizing the review and the reorientation of the system. And as I say, we've got discussions with the Department of Education in that regard. And I think this answer also goes to the ABET training, because it belongs to this category of trying to look at what is it that ABET programs can do to assist in this regard. When we look at our training, we want it to be a comprehensive, holistic training that will look at all of these aspects. As for the responsibility, I think the chair will take the responsibility to look at how practical it can be that this training can start with the honorable member. Yes, I leave that question to the chair to answer. And then the issue of the training that will relate, for example, to boreholes. Your question seems to be revolving around maintenance, where we have established the infrastructure, but what happens to the maintenance of that infrastructure? She has been working very much on that aspect. Because, and in one discussion that we had, who should actually bear this cost? We can talk about the initiation cost for the projects and programs. But maintenance is one critical thing, and in fact, in the infrastructure cluster, that's where we were debating this question. Who will bear the maintenance cost, and should the maintenance cost be considered as the initiation cost, or should they be follow-up costs? And we don't have an answer to that question. We've thrown it to the infrastructure cluster to actually deliberate on this question, because we feel it's critical. In fact, we even think that the initiation cost may look very exorbitant, but the maintenance costs are even higher. So it's a big question that we need to look at. But our approach as a department was, if you do not empower the people in the construction of this infrastructure, such that they know where are the nuts and bolts. For example, when we look at the windmills, some of those that are dysfunctional are not because of any serious technical problems. It is a missing screw of that windmill. If the people were told how to do this, and they would be able to run this maintenance office to make it work. So I think that the issue of capacity building, training, and empowerment of the people to know and master the maintenance issues of the infrastructure. But there is also the issue of the support of that maintenance work. So we are saying that we still we don't have an answer as to who will pay for this maintenance cost. But as to the way we do it, we believe the empowerment approach will affect. And then the issue of the composition of the Council of Stakeholders. Yes, the churches are included. We may not have mentioned them, but they are included. In fact, when we were launching the Council of Stakeholders in Moyesha, we did it in the church hall of Moyesha, and the church people were there in that. But the structured way of engaging the churches is a matter that we have discussed, that we would like a broad-based Council of Stakeholders. So will be the organized labor. We have not had a situation where this is actively involved. But to answer another question, we are not delinking land reform from this. Where we have handed over projects, I'll give the example of Greenfast Mark and the project in KZN. In KZN, we have about 203 million rand, which is grant funds that we have given to projects, which should be administered through Itala Bank. But those funds have not been used because there was no business plan. And now we are saying we use that 203 million for the various projects along the principles of the CRGP, so that we can invite other stakeholders who can come and assist. So in that way, we are not delinking this. We are saying every land handover will have to address the issue of the CRGP approach in them. And that's the part of the difference in the approach that we have now. We will have the different branches in the department in order to ensure effectiveness. But in the manner of approach, each of the branches, their mandate is to use the CRGP principles and approach in their day-to-day life. So if there is no dealing with it. And then as to the guidelines, we accept that comment, and we will look at that. Frequency. The technical committees are meeting every week. In Moyesha, they are meeting Tuesday every week. And then the Council of Stakeholders will meet monthly to receive the report from the technical committee. So that is the frequency that was arranged. And if the members would like to meet the Council of Stakeholders, you are most welcome. In your oversight visits, we would be happy to link it to the Council of Stakeholders. And then the issue of skills transfer and job creation, yes. I wanted to refer you to the model in the main presentation. You will see in that in the main presentation that we have made reference to phase one, phase two, and phase three of this process. Phase one is responding to the people's needs, and then phase two is responding to increasing business opportunities. And phase three is talking about expansion. This is the slide number nine. This slide number nine in the main presentation. That slide at the bottom, we have indicated that the phase one is the 2-year process. But phase two is reporting to expansion, and we believe that those people who have been employed must actually be involved in their own projects. We believe that these projects must be creating jobs. So we are not talking about just placement to other employment centers, but employment in the jobs that they are creating themselves. We believe that they must create jobs themselves in this period. In other words, in the 2 year period, these projects in which they are employed and paid for by government must be able to create jobs in themselves. And if they've got skills and they can sell those skills elsewhere, it's much better. So the answer lies in phase two and phase three of this employment creation model to respond to that question. And then the other question relates to the number of representatives to the composition. We have left this open because we do not know the nature and number of stakeholders that will be involved in any project. In some areas, there may not be as many different type of stakeholders, but whichever stakeholders exist in that area, we want them to be involved. Where we have got a structure is in the office bearers of this council of stakeholders, but we will have the leadership of that as in the office bearers, the chair, the secretary, the treasurer, and the normal office bearers of this to organize and plan for the coordinating. So that structure, we do have the numbers, but with the council of stakeholders, we have left it open depending on the number of different types, but each grouping would have one representative. So we have left it at that. And then the issue of the market and development, we have left, if you look at the phase one, phase two model, it addresses the issues of business development, enterprise development, and growth of those enterprises. So the answer lies in implementing that employment creation model. The failed projects in the Tele Valley, I think the commissioner is here, but I can comment that in those projects, we've got the development grants that have not been accessed yet by that community. And we had service providers that were appointed for those projects, and we are working on linking them to this CRDP model, like we are doing with InfraSmart. We have revisited InfraSmart, and we have looked at what is it that they can do to adopt the principles of the CRDP in the implementation of the post-settlement support. That is what we're doing for these types of projects. The expert, it's very interesting how readily available are these experts. You won't believe how many inquiries we have found with people who say we are willing to help. But we have found that they are very interesting interest in those experts. Some of them want to sell their products. They want us to follow a particular type of development. So they want to channel us to a particular approach which will entrench them in the implementation, and we are very careful not to go that direction. We know what we want to do, and those experts that we invite are the experts that are going to espouse our values, our approach, our empowerment of the people and the value creation in the areas where there is intervention. So these experts are available, but we have to screen them according to what is it that the people need and not what those experts want to sell. So that is our approach in dealing with the experts. They are available in abundance, but we've got to be diligent in the manner in which we link those experts to the people. And then the issue of the targets that we have outlined in the plan, we have talked about those plans with the various departments, and we have given ourselves the target of meeting some of those targets by those dates indicated there, 20% level of that project. And that target has been met. When we were there at the launch, the 20% implementation of those specific target was met in almost 80% of that list, because we've linked, we have tried to establish who is responsible for what on water, on education, and all of that. So the departments have taken commitment. So it was the 20% target for those days, but we are aiming for 80% target in November for some of the projects there. So we do have that. In November, towards the end of November, we want to see 80% achievement of some of those projects that are in that list. We do have this technical committee. They are meeting regularly, monthly, to reflect on progress that they are making in each of these projects. So we'll be able to know at what level is each of these projects. Some are slower because of the responsiveness of some of the departments, but some are faster. It depends on the responsiveness of those stakeholders involved. And then the area of sustainability, which was the last question, and the conditionalities. The conditionalities are defined by the people and the various departments. I gave the example of the grants, for example. The Department of Social Development is trying to review the grant, the conditionalities for the grant, that if we are going to offer the child grant support, one conditionality is that those children who are supported are going to school and are performing better in school. So if their performance in school, this is what is being reviewed. When the grants were initiated, they talked about attendance and never being registered in school. Now they are reviewing to say attendance is so easy. You can go in January and register in a school and be in the school register. But the issue of attendance during the year when you are drawing this grant is critical. Are you attending school? And the others will say performance should be looked at. Are you passing or not passing? So those conditionalities are some of the things that are going to be critical to be linked to the support that comes. So I think even in the other areas of support, be it in agriculture or water or whatever infrastructure, we need to link some conditionalities. These conditionalities are like looking at the assessment of the commitment of those communities, because when things are given for free, people have no responsibility. They must show responsibility by showing commitment. It is those conditionalities that we're talking about. And then the issues of capacity and budget. We don't have enough budget. We said we want to use our budget as a trigger so that the other departments can come. In Muyeshe, we planned to use about 20 million for this 20% level of performance. But we only used 5 million. Why? Because most of the government departments were forward in their support, like Water Affairs, for example. We plan to spend on sanitation, indication of those toilets in those two schools. We spent nothing because the Department of Water Affairs spend on their budget on the sanitation, so we did not spend. On the issue of the households, dwellings, we planned some support for some of the housing projects there, but IDP came and said for those projects that we wanted to implement, at least for those two, three households that were identified, they would spend on their budget. So we did not spend what we wanted to spend because IDP had spent on that item. And then so is agriculture. But what we're saying is the budget that we have, we may be using it as a trigger, but if other departments spend, we'll use the budget in something else. So that's the way we're using the budget on this. So the budget lies in other departments and in the municipalities, like in water, the municipality offered 5 million. They said in their IDP they have already planned and they are going to use the 5 million for water projects. So we don't need to spend that 5 million because they will from their own budget. So is the case of how we deal with the budget issue. We don't have big figures, but we do a joint planning process. It has worked in some cases, but in others not. So that's the way we deal with the budget. And the issue of sustainability, what happens after this? It's a big question. I think the best answer lies in the phase two, phase three process, where we say these people can do it themselves. In other words, the self-help type of approach will address some of the sustainability issues. But with the issue of government continuing its support, we would like the Council of Stakeholders to apply pressure for government to support those areas where government is responsible. In other words, those areas which are the normal responsibility of government, that they would put pressure on that. So that would be our response, Chairperson, to the question. I must stop.
Thank you very much. Members, if you have any follow-up questions, I would invite you to put them down in writing, because the three items that we have in the agenda will not be dealt with sufficiently if we continue to keep on this one. So, I want to move on. We are going to understand what I'm
saying. The question was answered.
One must realize that we are kind of moving. We are bad now. So, we are going to be moving. We are going to be moving.
No, there's a question that wasn't answered, sir. The issue of ownership.
No, that question, I am sorry that I didn't answer that question. The issue of ownership in all of these processes, we as government will not be owning any of these initiatives. The ownership is with the communities that are concerned. So the ownership will be in the communities where these projects are. If there is that women's agricultural project, it is their entity, as in the cooperative, that will own that process. So that ownership then will go to that community in that sense. And then
you will find a situation where this property will be sold, or they will be held by government, either of the group, or come back to it. So it must be very important for the department, whilst we accept that there must be grants, but it must be careful how the equipment, property, and other things would be monitored by the municipality. That the main property of the project, as long as we are still in that project. Some of the farms that have been handed over to groups have been sold again by the groups precisely because there is no monitoring of this aspect. And also, part of what we wanted to discuss with you is how the failing project that was the 4951 speed was done before. As told to the public auction, instead of selling back to the state so that they can give them back to other groups that may be interested in them, rather than what is actually happening now. Because land bank goes on and if they own the funds, and yet they give loans on the basis of the grants the government has provided. And yet they send them back into the public, and they will never go back. So you are going to have a revolving door if you continue like this. So I think your conditionality must be strengthened.
I can't say more, Chair, because I was going to say that it is that will be addressed in the conditionality, but you have said it, so I will take the advice.
Sir, the Department of Housing was zoning out RTP housing.
Mm.
At some point, we were saying to them, writing the title deed that if the family goes astound, the house must go back to the state. They didn't do it until late. And by that time, it's a record now in the housing. So it is going to be the same with the land as well. So I thank you, TJ. We look forward to interacting with you in this project and looking at this conditionality, because we don't can't believe the state money should be thrown out in this way and it disappears in the thin air because the state is looking after our money correctly. It won't be correct. Thank you very much. Can you
Thank you.